Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Creams and serums are made of 70% water, 15% preservatives and emulsifiers, leaving only around 15% for the active ingredients that your skin needs. But luckily now, there's Fiber Skincare.
15 years ago, the scientists behind Fiber Skincare started working on nanofibers, which are 500 times smaller than human hair. You know, I saw that in Three Body Problem. Mm. 1 year ago, they patented a way of wrapping the nanofiber around oil or liquid-based ingredients. This means they can deliver 5 times the active ingredients compared to creams or serums, as there is no need for water, preservatives, or emulsifiers.
The first formulation made with this technology is plant-based, anti-wrinkle. It's a set of patches that you use over a series of 7 days. You just put these on whenever you would apply your serums, and your skin is going to feel tighter in 10 seconds. And over the seven-day program, it has been clinically proven to reduce wrinkles by, get this, 19.4%, a very precise percentage. In fact, they have a tighter skin guarantee. If your skin isn't tighter in 7 days, they're going to give you your money back, no questions asked.
You get the tighter skin guarantee with this 7-day routine. Tighter skin or your money back. Get a 15% discount code by using the discount code GAME. That's Fiber Skincare.
It's the Game of Roses. Welcome to the Game of Roses.
This week was a big, fun week. I think I saw some real bad bitch energy, and I'm feeling like a bad bitch right now.
Welcome to Game of Roses. This is Pace Case.
This is Bachelor Clues. Continuing Book Watch. 2023.
So far, we haven't seen it yet, but we're waiting.
Episode 2.
Yes.
Of what will perhaps be 3 or perhaps be 12 or 13.
We don't know how many episodes ultimately will be this season, but tonight was a very important episode. A lot of things happened. We continue to see play from Christina Mandrell that is otherworldly. That is unlike anything I have ever seen from any player in the history of this game in terms of its utter dominance.
I feel like she's Dale Moss 2.0. Like Dale Moss, but for the Target demo.
She also has a package deal. She also has, you know, famous family. She has a lot of things that I have never seen in one player. And she is extremely adept at the game. We're going to get to all of that, believe me. And a lot of other crazy shit that happened in this episode. The Taj Wan stuff. Have a lot to say about that. Can't wait to get to that. But before we get to any of that...
Taj can't pee, Taj can't poo, Taj can't crash.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, God, the fucking producers. All right, we're going to get to all of that, rest assured. But before we do...
Taj can't resurrect.
We do have a bit of business. She did resurrect. She was technically in-game. She was not technically a player. She needed Shawcross to allow that to happen. But she was at a fucking after party.
I don't know. Do we allow, if they don't get a rose?
I mean, I think we put Heather Martin in Matt James's season because she had a pizza box, but she was in multiple episodes because they had to quarantine and all that. Anyway, we're going to get to that, rest assured. But first, we have some bits of business. All very important, but the most important bit of business is we must inform you about a new podcast that has come out in the nation. It is called Off Contract with Courtney Robertson. We are producing it with her, And the first episode dropped today.
Surprise!
Yes, it is a Monday surprise for everyone.
Big announcement.
But it is her first episode is a conversation with all-star fence player Ashley Iaconetti. A lot of interesting tea is spilled in this. A lot of very funny stuff. A lot of very surprising stuff. So we hope you will check that out. We are going to be airing the first 10 episodes of her podcast in our feed. We're going to put them out on Wednesdays, but you can check out her feed to get them straight from the source and leave reviews and 5-star ratings and all of that stuff.
And to get any episodes after the first 10.
Yes, but it has been a true pleasure to work with Courtney on this. She's obviously one of the greatest players who's ever played the game. And it's fascinating to see what she is doing now in this next part of her career with this podcast. I can't wait to see where it goes.
Listening to this first episode, I felt like Opto 2023 disassociating because I was like, wait, it's the greatest, one of the greatest players in the game asking questions of one of the other greatest players in the game, some of which we've discussed, and it's just so many dream come trues upon dream come trues. And Courtney is such a talented interviewer, just like naturally. And yeah, you all should check it out.
Yeah, she has a very uncanny knack to just ask the hard-hitting questions out of nowhere, seemingly, like, do you think Kelsey Poe killed her husband? If you want to see what Ashley Iaconetti's answer to that question is, you have to listen to this episode.
That is the best advertisement for it. She asked her.
It's absolutely hilarious, but please check that out. Again, we're very proud of this.
And you will not believe what Ashley Iaconetti responds.
We can't thank Courtney enough for letting us work with her on this. It has been a true pleasure. So that is bit of business number one. Bit of business number two is Bookwatch, like we were saying up top. We are waiting to see if our book is going to appear in the game because we know from reporting by Reality Steve that some players or a player, someone has read the book while they were shooting and producers found out about this. So we're waiting to see if it's going to pop up in the document itself. But if it doesn't, we can assure you this. It will be popping up in one place that you can see it, and that's Barnes & Noble at the Grove on March 1st. You see,
you got me going. I was like, wait, where?
You see, we were banned from the Grove about a year ago when the book came out, and that ban is up.
You can look up that episode where we talked about it. It was very distressing to some of us. Some of us produced tears.
I found it kind of funny.
Not clues.
But we will be at the Barnes & Noble at the Grove here in Los Angeles, March 1st. Time, I don't know. That will be coming.
Time.
Check our social media.
Where's my phone?
Well, maybe we'll have this information. Maybe we won't. But we'll be there on that evening, I believe.
No, it's not the evening.
Okay, I fucked that up. What time will it be then?
Okay. March 1st, 2023, it's part of Opto 2023, at 1 p.m., the Barnes & Noble at the Grove.
Okay.
And this is to celebrate our one-year anniversary of this ban that changed a lot of our lives forever, including Sweet Gnomes and Jet and Jack.
And including every player who is playing the game currently, because now the book's been out for a year. All the players in Zach Shallcross's season have had the ability to access it if they wanted to, if they knew it existed, and some were accessing it while shooting the show. So
there is such strong play that we saw in tonight's episode. I believe the reading of the book has begun.
Well, what we're going to start doing is when we are recognizing some play that happens in our beloved game that seems like, where'd they get that idea? We're going to read you passages from the book that might have influenced some of these plays. Again, we don't know who was reading the book, but it's looking kind of apparent that maybe there's some telltale signs. So let's get into this. Thank you for enduring our business. And now let's do what we came here to do, Pace Case.
And now, Pace Case and Bachelor Clues proudly present analysis of play in this week of our beloved game. This is Game of Roses.
Here we go. Episode 2, intro tonight on The Bachelor with that big, beautiful, chunky new logo. This is weight. This is gravitas.
I love this new logo that represents our weirdo, Zach Shellcross.
Yeah, this fucking weirdo. Tonight, a bad bitch will grab the attention of everyone in the room. We see helicopters. He's on cloud nine. Mandrill has big news, kisses, tears, sighs. Someone crashes a party and is going to try to move in. And we begin portion one. Daytime. Sunrise over the Mansion. We see a hummingbird. It's flapping its wings faster than any avian creature on this planet that we know of. Could be aliens, but it is hovering over the fountain outside Villa de Lavina, drinking the magic waters, drinking in the darkness so that one day it may become a dark lord in the hummingbird world. And this hummingbird was my... creature of the week.
This hummer that represents new beginnings because its association with springtime was my
creature of the week.
You're calling it a hummer?
You never called a hummingbird a hummer?
Never have.
You're not in the community, I guess.
No, I am not.
The avian.
The avian community on Reddit. You're deep in the avian forums.
We have no gatekeepers in the avian community. Oh. All are welcome.
Fantastic. I'll take a dip. The gates open to the mansion. The women run in. We get their reaction to being in the mansion. This is an I Love Cleveland.
I like the sprinting up the driveway shot. I don't feel like we've gotten this very many times.
I agree. It is a rare shot. It feels like, could be wrong in that, but we see them all cheersing each other with mimosas by the pool. We see Mercedes ITMing that he's a boy. Then she quickly corrects herself. No, he's a man. And all the women are then discussing how he's
Wait. You're skipping over something very important.
Oh, sorry.
All the players run in the mansion and then they jump on the couch. Katie says, I've never lived in a mansion. All the players get in the tub. They see the pool. They get in there. And they, I love Cleveland, something that is a staple of our beloved game and something that I read about on page 118 of a little book called How to Win the Bachelor.
Okay. Now I see where you're going. I was like, what are you doing? Yeah, I got it.
And I would just like to kind of promote this one experimental strategy for a free spirit that we have not seen yet. Hmm. It is, if you are a free spirit, you go to the balcony when the producers make everyone yell, I love insert city or insert bachelor's name off a balcony, perform a voluntary nudity play by flashing the entire city. We haven't seen it done yet. I want to see it.
Yeah, I agree. I would love to see that as well. But instead, what we don't get is a player flashing anyone. But we get Zach Shellcross virtually naked in a shower, scrubbing his chest, scrubbing himself. And this comes right on the heels of Mercedes ITMing that he's a boy, then correcting herself. No, he's a man. And then we see some other players discussing how he's a man and not a boy. And I guess visually, they're showing us, look, he's got hair on his chest. This is a man. But why would they leave this in here? I found myself questioning that in the edit. It's another fool edit to even have any player insinuate that he's a boy. I don't get it.
They can't help themselves.
They really can't. And we're going to get to a lot of other things that they couldn't help themselves from doing in tonight's episode. I will say this. I love this episode. Don't get me wrong, especially because of Mandrill. But the producers cannot get out of their own fucking way. I thought on night one, we had something here. I thought they fucking understood it. They don't. It's the same fucking producers. And we're going to see them inserting themselves into the document tonight a few times in an effort to make themselves more human. To make themselves appear to genuinely be concerned about the players. It fails. It fails. We got two shots of producers tonight. Talking to players. Trying to soothe their anxieties or whatever. It fails. And that's the road they're taking now. It's not to make the game better. It's to make themselves look less villainous. Anyway, we'll get to it.
Look, I disagree. I still am super Opto 2023, super excited by this episode as well. But I did not like something that occurs here, which is that we get Dark Lord Palmer and they put age 44 below his name. Have they ever put a host's name?
I didn't even see that.
I mean, a host's age?
I don't think so. I didn't even see it happen.
I literally went to Conspiracy Town. Did Dark Lord Harrison pay someone off to add this to DLP's Chiron?
That's so weird. Why would they have done that?
I don't know. To like be like, oh, there's no way they would be attracted to him. The generation is so different.
Or are they trying to insinuate that he's also a man because he's 44? He's over the man age. I don't know. It's very weird. I didn't realize that that was the case. Huh. I'll have to think about that one. But nonetheless, this 44-year-old man shows up in the mansion in the inauguration room, and he does this thing that always happens. The players cheer when he comes in, and then he does basically a post-game commentary on what we saw night one. He asks all the players about their performances. Jess says she didn't think she would kiss him, but she did. Mandrell says she got to vibe with him. Greer, you got the fimp. How does it feel? She says it makes it feel like what she was feeling got validated. Textbook answer here. You might even say she's read a book called How to Win the Bachelor. Then we see Brianna. Although America gave me that rose, I haven't got any validation yet. She needs to keep exploring. DLP says Zach told him his wife is in the room, but he's going to do things differently. This week, everyone gets to go on a date. There's going to be two group dates and a one-on-one. And Kat is out of the gate. Face playing like a fucking master. It's unreal. I was like, oh, that's definitely the face play of the game. And it ain't, because she tops it almost immediately. He drops the first date card. Brooklyn ITMs that she feels a spark and a connection, needs to get time with him. Then we start reading this date card that says, I'm looking for big, big love. It's the first group date. Brianna, Brooklyn, Catherine, Mercedes, Bailey, Davia, Kat. And when Kat's name is called, her reaction to finding out she's going to be on the first group date of the season was my
face play of the game.
It was beyond transcendent. Her eyes first look up, then down. Giant smile on her face. She looks almost demonic, almost angelic. You don't even fucking know what is happening here with her goddamn face, except that it is a delight to behold.
Kat's face play in response to the group date card that says, I'm looking for big, big love, has big, big aperture. Her eyes open beyond full aperture. We are straight up seeing eyeballs popping out of a human skull. And her mouth goes beyond her mouth, too. She is cross-eyed, and I feel possessed, and it is beautiful, and that's why Kat gets my
face play of the game.
She's a powerhouse.
I'm out of breath.
No, as you should be. That is what is warranted.
It was so good.
I know. She was fantastic. I felt very bad to see her go, as we know she did at the end of this episode. Another mistake by producers.
Huge.
We see then all the players run out into a party bus, and we get our first group date here. It is an artistic endeavor, a pageant kind of obstacle course. What would you call this? A pageant, I think, is roughly what I would call it. It's very much like when they do the grown-ass man and that kind of stuff. You have to do multiple little things on a runway. So here they arrive in downtown LA. They run into this building and they meet Lotto, who is a musical artist who has 9.8 million Instagram followers and has a song called Big Energy. She tells them she's taking over the date and she's looking for bad bitch energy. Then Zach walks in as if on cue. I'm looking for bad bitch energy. These doors open. Zach comes in a black leather jacket, trying his best, really trying his best here.
That they forced him into.
You know? He's just trying to look hard as hell. This man is a dork.
This man is a fucking weirdo. He's weird as hell.
That's true. We're finally getting the weirdo. It's coming out now.
And we get Lotto says it's confidence in her ITM, but she wants to see how they dance at first. So we're getting this weird group circle dance. We see like Kylie dancing and then Balin freak dances on Zach. And then Kat does the splits. Are you kidding me?
Just drops into the splits.
Bringing it 100% right off the bat. I loved it. I can't believe they...
I can't believe it either. She was so fucking entertaining.
Dumb.
Keep her around for at least another week or two. Get rid of her by the on the first real rose ceremony.
In my opinion.
No, it was. It was bad producing. Ugh,
yeah. You hate to see it. Lotto is announcing that more women are going to be coming on today's date. Who are they? We don't see until portion number two. Kat recognizes them instantly, and it's Victoria Fuller, Tajwan Hawkins, and the host of Off Contract with Courtney Robertson, Courtney Robertson. They emerge from two pink doors, and we see flashbacks of all three bad bitches.
These flashbacks had me fucking yearning for the old days. You see fucking Fuller just going head to head, taking no fucking prisoners against in a conversation with Elia Benavides from season 24.
It should have been Excuse You What, in my opinion, but
it was good. The clip they played was good. You see Tajwan going head to head against a Ferguson twin in a BIP.
You're a pigeon. I'm a seagull.
Yes, the pigeon seagull. Fuck. And then you see Courtney Robertson in her skinny dipping scene from season 16. Groundbreaking. That was groundbreaking when she did that. Yeah, I'm winning. God damn it. It was good to see her play again.
That skinny dipping play. I mean, I know Courtney has, you know, various opinions around that play because didn't they release one that was unedited or something?
Yes, I think so.
Yeah, something messed up happened like that without permission, but it is so iconic, that scene.
Yeah.
I love seeing it. And yeah, she's. Yeah.
Significant piece of history, but all three of these ex-players are there to judge the BBE competition. Courtney says they're there to help Zach find his baddies, and Lotto says a bad bitch will grab everyone's attention.
Not steal your man.
Yeah, they're not there. Don't worry. I'm a happily married man, just like Dark Lord Harrison. They always need to make that very clear. They're like, if other people are coming in, they're not here to try and infringe on the dating. But Lotto says a bad bitch is going to grab everybody's attention no matter what they're doing. And so the players all now have to one by one walk this catwalk and they get to use props and stuff. We see Mercedes is first. She has these silver gloves on and she's got a cane. She's doing this little dance and Davia ITMs how hot Mercedes is.
Loved this play by Davia.
I agree. Fantastic. Kat is up next. She has on cat ears and does a kind of a little crawling cat maneuver with some splits. Genevieve is next. She has a crown and a ribbon that she wraps around his neck, kind of chokes him. Bailey is wearing a pink wig, pink jacket. Catherine's in a cowboy hat.
The choking play brought me right back to that choking Clayton video.
Yes. And then Tajwan ITMs that all these players could use some pointers. Kylie has on angel wings and comes out bringing the dancing. And we find out she's an NBA dancer, which we already knew. And then Brianna ITM's not being nervous at all. She comes out in a cowboy hat, shooting money out of a gun, and sits him down in a chair and gives him a kind of implied lap dance as well as a kiss on the cheek.
That was a third audience play.
Oh, for sure. The money gun? Yeah, you can't do that without a producer. And then the final challenge finds each player having to tell Zach a time when they were, in quotes, a bad bitch. And Zach further explains that this means they should recount a time when they stood their ground. And Kylie is up first after an ITM about being nervous. She plays a PTC of having a poor white mama, and she was in a competition when she was told not to wear her natural curls, but she did it anyway and she won. And then Brianna talks about using her savings to start her own beauty company. Bailey, I guess, is talking about leaving Tennessee. Genevieve says she was goofy. Brooklyn did something by herself. We don't know what because it's edited out. And then she takes him to do a tequila shot. Catherine says he's worth it. Many of these have nothing to do with being bold.
By the way, kiss for Kylie, kiss for Brooklyn.
Yeah, we got some kisses here. But the way they've cut this, I have no idea what any of these players are talking about. Fucking terribly edited portion of this group date. It makes no sense. And this is a part of my problem with the producers that I've had for the past couple of years that I currently am having in this episode. They don't give you anything to get to know these players. And the players, you do kind of get to know a personality from, like Kat, because she has crazy face play, they just fucking eliminate. I don't know anything about a moment in any of these players' lives when they had to stand their ground. This could have been a great opportunity to get PTCs out to do anything. Instead, they do nothing.
I mean, we only get it from Kylie.
Yeah, it's incredibly inert.
Taj ITMs that Zach is very cute. If he said, come join my season, I'd be like, buckle up. And she's basically loading that she's going to crash.
Ugh,
And there was no winner, by the way, right? They were all bad bitches.
That's right. Lotto cast the final judgment. We didn't get to see the judges again, except for whatever Tajwan is going to do, which we know is like this dumb producer thing. We've seen this.
They should have just had those three come and party with them at the after party.
Or use them in any way in the fucking edit. Courtney Robertson and Victoria Fuller are not even present in the edit after they walk out. Then we get this casting card. We got some big things in store for the next season of Bachelorette. Nothing sinister here at all. Just very straightforward. Portion three begins. It's the after party. And we see the rose on the table. And we get the first one-on-one time is with Catherine. He asks her how she got to this point. She explains that she dates with purpose. She feels like they're on the same page. And he's refreshed by her admitting that she wants something serious. Is that refreshing? Haven't literally all 30 women said this? And then she says she likes the best friend thing, but she wants to make something very clear. He's not just her friend, leans in for a kiss. Great kiss lead-in line here. Great play by Catherine.
Amazing kiss lead-in line.
It's very strong.
I was like, oh, Catherine's a contender. I didn't really notice her before this point. And she loads love level one. I like him. Brianna brings up wanting validation after getting America's Femp. And in her one-on-one, she says, it's been really hard. I don't feel like I have a support system. I was rattled the day you spoke. And Zach's like, wait, night one. And she is like, it's hard to feel like I could become something. And she produces tears and says, I was like, maybe I should go home. I don't think you would have cared for me to stay. I thought this was an interesting make me stay.
Me too. Me too. I actually thought it was a good play.
Yeah, I did too.
In the beginning, I thought it was a good play. It turned out to not be a great play, but I thought it was very interesting to do it this fast, especially after getting America's Femp. The producer, I don't know if the producers have told Zach, like, we like her, but it's obvious because they gave her this manufactured rose. So he must feel some obligation to keep her around. And if she's saying this, I felt like I was going to leave. It's like, okay, I need to make sure that this is okay. And eventually this conversation does end in a kiss. So it seems like she's kind of turned the corner here. She played the tears, said, I was thinking about leaving, but everything seems to be okay here.
I feel like she's an erratic player. There's some really excellent plays like this, and then we'll get to it.
Yes, we will.
We get to the house. Knock, knock. We have Christina Mandrell loading that we've heard it's going to be an intimate one-on-one, and I have a lot to talk about. She's loading that package deal for us, and she gets the one-on-one date card. Let's let our love soar. Gabby, I'm so happy for you. We cut back to the group date after party, and Kylie is loading love level one. Bailey ITMs, it's a really great group. I can't imagine drama. So of course, Taj comes in, a veteran attempting a second tour.
And she right off the bat gets a steal from Kat, who is in her one-on-one time, and Kat ITMs confusion at Tajwan's presence. And she comes back to the other players and tells them that Tajwan has crashed the after party. And then we get to portion four. It is the other players not happy about Tajwan showing up, and Tajwan ITMs that she's there to shake things up. And Zach checks all of her boxes. She wants to join the player pool. And we see this one-on-one time with Tajwan and Zach. She says that she wants to use her BBE to lay it out there. He's a good guy. He has a good head on his shoulders. Something she's looking for in a partner. She wants to add herself to the mix. He's like, well, that's something new. No, it's not. This happens almost every season. This is an old trick, and it's done here so fucking poorly. There is nothing believable in Tajwan's performance that she actually gives a fuck about any of this. It's clear the producers have set all of this up, and it's also clear that it's not going to work. She's put no enthusiasm into this. The producers have put no beneficial treatment into it to help her get across here. This is completely a waste of fucking everyone's time.
No, they could have given her like separate one-on-one time like they did with Blake Moynes and Katie Thurston, you know, and let them have like a one-on-one conversation and get to know each other. We see the other women ask, what are your intentions from Taj? She was like, I was here to judge baddest bitch. Some of you guys weren't that good today on the stage. Starts roasting them.
This is all scripted.
And a lot of this is off face too. Yeah. I feel like they're kind of giving Tajwan a villain edit. And she ITMs I was taking more initiative than them. The girl should be nervous, but I'm joining this evening. And she says to them, it could be 20 girls against me. Come at me. I'm fine with it.
But it's all like, I don't know what the producers did. If they offered her another paradise berth, if they told her, hey, you never know, maybe he'll let you in the season. I don't know how they got her to do this, but it just fucking falls completely flat. And you see Tajwan, he comes back to talk to the women after he's talked to Tajwan and after all these women have, you know, said that they don't want her to be there, blah, blah, blah. And he tells them essentially, there actually is one interesting thing where Tajwan tells all the other players that they want to come for her. She's fine with that. And she keeps trying to rile them up and saying it's going to get harder from here and all this. And they're not buying it. They're not engaging in the fight with her because I think all these players know this is a fucking producer prop. And they're like, we're not taking the fucking bait. So these old tired fucking strategies that producers are doing to try and rile up drama don't fucking work anymore, guys. You got to do new shit. Guys, this is so fucking boring to me. Anytime you now see a player fired into the middle of the season to try and crash it, it's like that shit was groundbreaking in some earlier seasons. And it actually produced things like the great one, Nick Vial, coming out of Caitlin Bristow's season. Like, it was possible back then. This is just not going to work, especially somebody who's like Tajwan that's coming in there immediately insulting all the other players like villain from the get-go. It was just a fucking misguided thing. And how much time does it take up? So this is now time that he can't talk to these other players in a season that's supposed to be all about finding love and blah, blah, blah.
If she's going to join the season, fine, spend that much time on this. But if she's not going to, what is the point?
Nothing. They should have cut it out. Because instead of having this, maybe we could have had a little bit of the day portion of a whole fucking group date that they cut out. We'll get to that, of course.
However, Kat is doing a new face once every minute. And what she is doing in this episode is, like, insane. She should have gotten a rose just for this.
This was like, to me, I won't say it was quite there, but it was like McKenna Dorn level in a single episode face play. But McKenna Dorn has that one episode with all the tongue play that that's just going to be the best face play that's ever existed. Nonetheless, let's move on.
Zach comes back to the ladies. He says, she wanted to join. I couldn't say yes because of all my actual feelings with all of you. And I want to let you know she's no longer here. I saw her pizza box spinning on her head tapes and they were not good.
She did not have big pizza box energy. So even Zach can't be tricked here. And he walks over, picks up the group date rose, gives it to Catherine for the more than friends kiss. So that turns out to be a great play. And Brianna, then ITM's being panicked. It felt like a slap in the face that she didn't get the rose and she's nervous about their connection. We begin portion 5.
Wait, you're going to skip something important.
Oh, sorry. What do you got?
Taj produces tears, says, everyone else finds their person. I never do. I'm not going to cry. Bad bitches don't cry.
You're right. This was very important because she whispers to a producer that bad bitches don't cry. And the producer says, sometimes bad bitches cry. They put it on the fucking screen. They show you a subtitle of the producer talking. It says producer colon. Sometimes bad bitches cry. And this producer was my
Jorge Moreno, bystander of the week.
Now, we'll see another producer come in later in the show, but this is a producer saying, it's okay to cry. Don't worry about it. And it's kind of funny. Bad bitches cry sometimes, whatever. But this is a producer being cut into the fucking show directly to try and sue the player who's not even a player, who didn't make it into the player pool in a completely fucking frivolous and useless narrative that they've drummed up about Tajwan trying to get into the show. Why do they put this in here? One reason. We're not as bad as you think we are. Look, we're trying to help her in her time of need. They are cutting themselves into the season to try to look like nice guys, even though they're the very ones that manufactured the entire fucking situation you're watching. It's unreal to me.
Yeah. They probably already knew that Zach was not interested before sending her in to have that conversation.
They already know who Zach's ringwinner is. That's how this show works. He's not interested in anyone except for the person that's going to win the show at this point.
By the way, this makes me realize that I skipped over something.
Oh, shit.
And there's one player or one person that I would like to highlight because they were able to appear in a season that is in a completely different era than their own to host this group date, come out of you know, retirement and back on the scene. And that's why Courtney Robertson was my Jorge Moreno bystander of the week.
Is that, can she be an official bystander? She's a player.
I don't care.
She's one of the greatest players.
Go to portion five.
Portion five begins. It's daytime. It's daytime. We're at the mansion. It's the pool. The players wonder, you know, who all has kissed him. And Catherine admits that she didn't know there was.
You always giving your awards to multiple people. Never question that. Oh,
I was just curious. That's fine. You could give the word however you like. Catherine admits that she did not know there are other kissing styles outside of kissing with tongue. And Jess says there are times for tongue kissing and times for not tongue kissing. Christina gets ready for her one-on-one as she ITMs not being able to feel her body. She says that she hopes finding out she's a mom won't throw him for a loop. And this is the first one-on-one of the season. Now, I'd like to first deliver some statistics to you. This is from a book called How to Win the Bachelor. It is about one-on-one dates.
What page?
This is page 165. If anybody out there fucking following along. So.
They may be. I keep it right next to me.
Oh, it's like on your bedside? I don't do that. But the inaugural one-on-one is an important date. It's produced three ring winners. Amanda Marsh, season one. Helen Exterowitz, season two. Becca Kufrin, you may have heard of her, season 22. It has produced one last woman standing in Susie Evans from season 26. But it has produced more bachelorettes than any one-on-one over the course of the season, with seven. Meredith Phillips, season four. Jillian Harris, season 13. These are the seasons that they played, not their bachelorette seasons. Meredith Phillips, season four. Jillian Harris, season 13. Ali Fedotowsky, season 14. Ashley Hebert, season 15. Claire Crawley, season 18. Becca Kufrin, season 22. And that Instagram champion, Hannah Brown, season 23. So there you have it.
Such an important position.
Yep. And who got it? Mandrell.
Christina Mandrell.
And now I also wrote this down because I am a maniac. I just wanted to go through the last first one-on-ones back down to Goldini, going in reverse order. So Eckerd's was Evans. Matt James's was Bree Springs, who came in third. Peter Weber's was Madison Pruitt, who came in second. Colton Underwood's was...
I mean, this was the Madison Pruitt date.
Yeah, it was...
early meeting of the family.
Exactly. It was exactly the same thing. So they didn't even go back that far in seasons. That's three seasons ago. Colton Underwoods was Hannah Brown, who won the crown. Ari Leyendykes was Becca Kufrin, ring, crown, and sand, tropical royale, first and only. Nick Viles was Daniel Maltby. This is where it starts to fall apart a little bit. Sixth place.
Ari Leyendykes was Becca Kufrin. That was before the crystal date?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I think they were in the same episode, but hers was first. Hers was the one-on-one A. Ben Higgins was Kayla Quinn, third place, supposed to be the bachelorette, and they took it away from her after Ben Higgins' disastrous admission that he loved two players simultaneously, and then obviously JoJo Fletcher got her victimization and became bachelorette. We then get Chris Soules in season 19, Megan Bell, I don't even remember her, came in seventh. Juan Pablo Galvez, you might remember Claire Crawley, came in second place that season and ultimately later a crown. And then we go all the way back to Sean Lowe Goldini. And his first one-on-one was Sarah Herron, who came in ninth place that season, but is an extremely important figure, obviously, in the culture.
And Gore Girl.
And Gore Girl. So there you go. That's just a little history of the one-on-ones. A lot of that can be found in our book. But we get...
Yeah, what's your statistical likelihood of becoming a Gore Girl if you get the first date, though?
Depends on how closely entrenched you become in the show, how closely how much the producers can sink their claws into you.
Zach comes in with big dad energy in khaki shorts.
Yep.
I know we say every season, just sometimes it feels like they're clowning with the clothes, the leather jacket, the khaki shorts.
Yep. I don't usually write things down, but I wrote also that he shows up with big D energy, but instead of dad, I wrote dork, big dork energy. Gabby here gets an ITM out of nowhere that she can't get discouraged. There's still time, even though she turtled. Then they get in a car, him and Christina Mandrell. He drives, they kiss. We get footage of her live finale shots. They discuss musical tastes. He admits his first concert was Nickelback, which I like. I gotta say, I like Nickelback. I know that ain't popular,
but I don't give a shit.
Zach or Clues?
Never made it as a wise man dreaming, and this is how you remind me of what I really am.
Anyway, he drives her to a helicopter. They fly around, get some kissing. We're seeing all the nice shots. They fly over LA. They fly by the Hollywood sign. The other players are made to watch the helicopters that flies away. Force peeping Tom here. A bunch of kisses.
Love that. By the way, Christina says, this is on my bucket list. I thought this was an excellent play. Anything you do on your dates, you should say it's on your bucket list.
I agree. Eating a dinner, drinking wine, putting on clothing. They wind up at a house with a big American flag flying right out front, and he tells her that she's going to meet his family. He missed his mom's birthday, so this is a family barbecue to make up for it, and his dad has a bunch of firefighter friends who are over. There's a bunch of cousins. It's this huge backyard party with, I don't know how many people were there. It looks like 50 people.
I wrote, now they are at a house with an American flag. Uh-oh.
For real, though. For real. I mean, I'm not saying that this is definitive, conclusive proof of anything, but, you know, we have some theories about why the fantasy suite with Rachel Recchia might have taken a turn for the worse, and this is certainly not combating those theories, I'll say.
Zach says this is to celebrate his mom's birthday earlier this week. This, I mean, I'm just having flashbacks of Sweet Nums and
747 Flyer
renewing their vows.
I agree.
We get, there's blue flower shirt dad, Megan mom in white flowers, firefighter buddies. And Zach says, it's our first date. And Mandrill cheers to first dates. And then she's like, recognizes someone, maybe the sister. She's like, this is the firecracker. Already she's batting 1,000 or whatever is the good one number.
She's a fish to water here. She's playing ping pong with the mom. She's asking the cousins, tell me all the dirt on him. She's got them wrapped around her fucking little finger.
He's a good looking guy, but I didn't expect him to be goofy in the best way.
And then ultimately Zach's mom gets out this baby book of photos and starts showing us all these pictures. Oh, isn't he a cute baby? And they do this weird thing with the audio. As his mom is talking, they kind of taper it off into silence and a weird, like, echoey reverb. And they show Christina Mandrell, like, looking into the distance as though she's going into a trance.
Babies are her bumper cars.
Yeah, that's literally what I was... Are they Puccini-ing her? That's what I fucking wondered. So then...
She's dissociating as she sees this baby photo.
Give her a Puccini and then cut to the ITM.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Clues. A Mother's Day is coming up.
That's true.
You know, that's one of the most important holidays. We got to honor our mothers. They all went through a lot to get us here into this planet. And the gifts for Mother's Day, they can be a little predictable and boring. Sweaters, candles, the dreaded bathrobe. You only need one bathrobe, in my opinion. That's why Aura Frames is the perfect gift to mix things up this year. Named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter, Aura Frames are guaranteed to bring joy to moms of all ages.
Aura Frames are Wi-Fi connected. They come with unlimited storage. You can share as many photos as you want from your phone to your mom's frame. Not only is she going to be grateful that it's not just another sweater for Mother's Day, she's also going to love that an Aura frame means she gets to see more of you. Or in my case, she gets to see more of my cat, Skaboolian. My mom loves seeing him rolling around, playing with his toys, doing whatever, and I can upload as many images of him as I want every day, and my mom gets to see them in her Aura frame and then text me about it for all the rest of the day. Right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Everybody listening to Game of Roses can save on that perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame.
That's AuraFrames.com. Use code ROSES at checkout to save. Terms and conditions apply.
Clues, have you ever experienced a dry, itchy scalp or ever wondered
Hell yes.
why your color isn't lasting as long as your hairdresser promised?
Hell yes. Well, unfiltered mineral water could be the reason why. Did you know hard water is a leading cause of damaged hair and dry, irritated skin? And about 75% of the United States uses hard water filled with dissolved minerals and added chlorine.
I thought it was 85%. And that's where Canopy's new filtered showerhead comes in. Canopy, known for their beauty hacks and reimagined humidifier, has revolutionized the filtered showerhead. Dermatologists recommended unique three-stage filtration system greatly reduces contaminants and odors in your shower water, leaving you with healthy hair and glowing skin.
Best of all, the Canopy filtered showerhead is hassle-free. Installation's a breeze, and it's unique. Quick-release filter replacement feature allows for seamless filter replacement unlike any others on the market.
Go to getcanopy.co to save $25 on your Canopy filtered showerhead purchase today with Canopy's hassle-free filter subscription.
Even better, anybody listening to Gore right now can use code ROSES at checkout to save an additional 10% off your Canopy purchase. Hurry, your hair and skin will thank you.
And so they talk about how things are going to be, she gets this idea where she's talking about how things are going to be great, but the baby album reminds her that she has a baby of her own to reveal. Zach brings out this birthday cake as Christina ITMs liking Zach and his family. She's got fear though that her package deal might be too much. And I just wrote down, the producers have already told him he has to keep you until Fantasy Suites. There is no jeopardy here. We have also seen multiple promos that feature Christina Mandrill, so we know she's not leaving in this episode.
I was tricked. I got really scared.
What?
For a second, and I was like, they wouldn't do that to us.
Not only that, but like there's this thing,
they took away Kat. They're taking away the people I love.
But there's a thing this season, they have really pumped up the season that it's about a guy who's, you know, seriously looking for love, and that's all they want to do is help this guy find his soulmate. Would they have put somebody on the show with a kid if that was like a deal breaker for him?
Yeah, I mean, they put a bunch of people who weren't Christian on Tayshia's season,
right? But I mean, even if it, I don't mean if it is a deal breaker for him. I mean, if it is a believable deal breaker that he would like kick her off on the first date. He knows he's got to keep her around. And I think ultimately she's going to get...
He would come off 4TWR.
Yeah. I think, you know, we've predicted that she would go out in third place. I think she's now going to go out in fourth based on this package deal play that Zach was doing here. I think he's going to have the hometown. He's going to meet the child. And then he's going to say, you know what? It's gotten really serious and I'm sorry, but like... I can't take you to Fantasy Suites and it has to end here.
You think she's going to Stanton?
Yeah.
By the way, did you see that play?
Which play?
Mandrell, Stanton.
Yes. The parasocial play. Yeah.
Yeah.
The Parents of Daughters Coalition or whatever that she's forming on TikTok.
I mean, you're not going to get to talk about it because you're not going to be here for Twibbon, but
I know. I'm taking Twibbon off. My girlfriend and I are going away for her birthday for a couple of days. But I will be back next week, rest assured, and I will still be watching those goddamn parasocial plays.
Clues is a romantic.
At heart, this is true.
Romance is our number one value at Gore.
All vampires are romantic at heart, as are all edgelords. Let's move on to portion 6. It is night. We are at the Orange County Mining Company. Zach is taking Mandrill to a nice dinner. He cheers us how awesome the day was into getting to know her more. He tells her that he threw her into the lion's den. And she blew him away with her play. And she blew me away as well. I mean, she's just a fucking perfect player. She says she had a lot of fun.
She is. I know. I was feeling like, uh-oh, how am I even going to give out other awards?
We're not. She's going to fucking crush every goddamn game.
Because Christina Mandrell says, I do have to tell you some pretty big news. Nothing I wanted to hide. I wanted you to feel safe talking about it. But if it's too much, I'll genuinely understand. But I do have a daughter. She's 5, almost 6. She is my world. Blakely May. She's even more Southern than me. I'm a mama. That's who I am. Unconditional love. And I want that for me. She just started kindergarten. I sent her to her first day by myself. I want to do those memories with someone. I actually know what love is now. And this package deal play by Christina Mandrell was my
play of the game.
It was a very high level play.
I'm sorry. She got the surprise early meeting of the family, handled it like a pro, then plays her package deal. It's incredible.
I agree with you. What would you have done if instead of the package deal, she would have said, I have something very big to tell you. I've been in the house now for a couple of days and I've been reading a book called How to Win the Bachelor.
I mean, that would obviously also be my play of the game.
Yeah, me too.
If Christina Mandrell hasn't read How to Win the Bachelor, I'll shit my pants.
I mean, we'll get to another play she makes later as my play of the game, and then I'm going to read something directly from our book that gives me some indication she might have read it. But
I think I might know what that is.
Zach says he can sense her motherly love, and he appreciates her sharing. It's a lot to take in, you know, and he is looking for a family to build on, and it's incredible that she already has that, so he doesn't want her to feel stressed about it. But he is scared about it. And she says she doesn't want to raise a daughter by herself. She wants a teammate who can take on parenting for her and her daughter. He says it's something he needs to think about because it scares him. She says you should think about it because she's chasing something real and she doesn't want him to just say, hey, everything's okay.
I'm chasing real. She's already got the tagline for her fucking season.
And the title of her first single. That is a country song waiting to be fucking written. I'm chasing real. I didn't find it the first time around. Now I'm chasing real.
I want the best for Will Blakely May.
So they then do this weird thing where they intertwine their arms and take a sip out of their cups. And he ITMs that he always wanted kids, but this introduces a timeline and that scares him. Sometimes you have to be selfish, he says, which is a false jeopardy here. Of course, he's going to keep her. Back at the mansion, portion 7 begins. It's night.
I was tricked.
I can't believe you were tricked by it. I cannot believe it. There's literal footage of her crying on the staircase.
I was panicking.
All right.
I didn't think of that.
Oh. All right.
I should have.
Yeah, I agree. Back at the mansion, it is nighttime. The other players are discussing how they think Mandrell's date is going. They think it might be a lot for him to digest, the package deal. Back on the 101, he tells her that he's feeling overwhelmed and he would do her a disservice by saying they could just move forward. He feels like there's something there, but he has to be honest with her. He's had too many thoughts run through his head about his readiness to be a dad right now. He doesn't know if he's going to be a good dad. He says she more than deserves to know how he's feeling. Then he ITMs being caught off guard, and they just keep pounding you with like, he's not going to pick her. He's not going to pick her. Then he picks up the rose and gives it to her because he thinks the world of her. She's worth it. And she is showing him signs of someone he wants to spend a long time with, and he wants to know more about her and her daughter. And so he gives her this rose. She accepts it, thanks him. She's happy. She's a mom. She understands that it's a lot to consider, and this rose means so much to her. We get a kiss. And that is essentially it for this one-on-one date, which was played, in my opinion, perfectly. She revealed the package deal. During this kiss, she's getting these big hero music score, and Mandrell ultimately ITMs that they had a bigger conversation than just the rose, and it was meaningful to her, and it means more than just being there to her. I mean, you can't do it better than this if you're a package deal player.
No.
You reveal it.
She's the Emily Maynard of 2023.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But also, like, she's got a fucking something in there. She's like Emily Maynard meets Hannah Brown. It's really a fascinating play style that she has. It is so bold and it is so fucking overwhelming. She's winning the family over. Now, we're going to see what happens next week. Obviously, we have a little more to cover here of this game, but like, it looks like some crazy shit's going to happen. We'll get to it. Portion 8. I'm like fucking...
You're getting ahead of yourself.
Yeah, I know. I'm having conversations with myself. Though. Calm down, dude. You're going crazy. What the fuck are you doing?
DLP says, nominate your senior citizens. We're back at the house. Jess says, oh, when you came back from the first group date, you were so excited. So everyone's excited for group date number 2. And Gabby again hits this, I need to make an impression today because she has turtled since the limo exit. And then they cut.
Yeah.
And what do they cut to? The day portion of the group date?
Nah.
No. They cut to the after party. And that was my wow-wee moment of the week. We were robbed.
These moments make me want to burn down my domicile. I hate this. I hate when we don't get to see the fucking day portion of a group date. This is like saying, here's the Super Bowl that you have to watch. What we're going to show you, though, is the last half of the fourth quarter. You don't get to see anything else. I hate it. This is what I wrote down in my notes. Group date 2? question mark, day portion not shown by the cowardice of the producers. Here is who was on that group date. We also don't get to see the group date card, so we don't know who it is, but this is who it is. I've used deduction, of course. Greer, Victoria J, Kimberly, Ariel, Gabriella, Anastasia, Katie, Alyssa, and Jessica, and Charity. But I just don't understand, like, again, we have this whole fucking thing about Tajwan trying to come into the show. She ultimately does not come into the show. So why include any of it at all? It's false drama. No one gives a fuck about it. And instead of showing us this, you could have cut together 2 or 3 minutes from the day portion of this group date. That might have been enough. If there's even one funny thing in it, one interesting thing, show us that. Instead, they show us nothing. And it leaves me wondering, why wouldn't they? Because something that happened... Well, just pack your bags. Okay, let me tell you. Pack your bags. Pack your bags. We're going to Conspiracy Town.
Conspiracy Town. Population. Me.
Something that happened in that group date, I think, is contradictory to whatever narrative they are promoting. I think he might have had a good connection with somebody. Somebody might have made a good play. Somebody might have done something very interesting on that group date. That, again, contradicts whatever the fuck they're trying to do with this Brianna and Mandrell rivalry that they're trying to promote or something. I don't know. I don't know what it was.
Wait, here's what I thought you were going to say. Book watch.
Oh.
They talk about the book in this one.
Oh, that could be. That could be. Maybe that's where the book was in the group date.
Maybe there's some book tattling.
Could have been. I don't know.
Everyone has an opinion on the book drama.
There is a reason they didn't show us that. I'm convinced of that. And I don't know what it is, but...
I mean, they took things from us.
They always take things from us every fucking season. We got nothing left to give. I'm a hollow man now filled with the dark energies of the pit, but I'm okay with that. Feels good.
I'm endlessly giving.
Yeah, I guess I am too. Anyways...
Ariel gets the first responder at the after party, I guess. I'm mad. And she says that she's upset she didn't get a mini date the first night. Let's write down our biggest fears coming here. Mine is getting my heart broken. Took a long time to recover. She's like, let's ask a question that's going to lead to my PTC.
I know. I mean, good on her getting out the PTC. And he says his biggest fear is falling for somebody who's not looking for a best friend, the ultimate betrayal. She says she also has another fear. Passes him the paper. He reads it. It's not being kissed tonight. And he's like,
I think we can get rid of that fear.
Kiss. Decent kiss lead in line here. Decent play. Yeah.
Yeah.
She comes back to the group, gets glowed by another player. She feels good. And then we get some one-on-one time with a series of people, Greer, Katie, so on and so forth. Everybody's getting kisses. We don't really see anything in their one-on-one time. We have no idea what they're talking about. So not only do we get no group day portion, we now don't even get to see what most of these players are talking to him about in the night portion. Just a bunch of kissing. And then we come to Jess. She says she's crushing. This is a love level one. She asks him to know something unique about him that only she would know. And he talks about why he has such a strong relationship with his mom. He was diagnosed with pyloric stenosis when he was born. This is a PTC. He was told he wasn't going to live, but his mom kept fighting and he feels like he's there for a reason. And she thanks him for sharing this and he gets a kiss. This was fucking outstanding. She pulled a new PTC out of him that I had no idea about.
It's such a good idea because he's probably got a certain amount of stories about his life that he'd like to convey. It's just a great opportunity to just give him a PTC lead in line.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
And something that he hasn't told anyone else. It means it has to be like special between them. It's fantastic.
Yeah, I absolutely love this play. We then see the rose on the table. Gabby's expressing anxiety as she ITMs that this is make or break for her. She hasn't had a conversation with him yet. She feels left behind the other players. And then we go to portion number 9. Back at the mansion, Brooklyn reveals to another player that she thinks there are some girls who share too much about their dates and conversations, and she doesn't want to hear about any of the other players kissing him or what they're doing on their dates. She's already getting jealous, which is very bad in the first week of play. She ITMs that it's girl power right now, but you can't be happy for a person who's dating the same person you are. Then back at the after party.
I love all the sharing.
Yeah, that's what you have to do. You have to do that, I think. But back at the group day after party, Gabby explains the anticipations making her frustrated. And then We see some one-on-one time with
Allie.
Yeah, Zach and Allie. He tells her that she has a good perspective and it's healthy for everyone's mental state. Kiss. Again, this is like, it's nothing. They're talking about nothing. And we keep seeing that Gabby wants to have a conversation with Zach. And she has this ITM where she says she wants to, or she's telling the other players she wants to show them that she's quirky and fun, then wants to go deep and then tie it with a perfect bow. Has she read How to Win the Bachelor? We literally outline what a after party conversation should be like. And she has said it almost verbatim.
We outlined something called the 101 formula or whatever. And it was literally like this, how you lead in with this early thing. And it can lead to a situation like this where you're overthinking it because you're trying to, because time is so precious in this game and you might be overthinking it. Luckily, Gabby already has enough of a connection with Zach that this doesn't matter. And she says she has a thing with nicknames, tries to call him a bunch of things. Zacharias, Zachy is the only one that he approves of.
Because that's like Berzacky.
Oh.
By the way, I found out what that was about, I think. I think it's like Versace, like Verzacky. I think it was Verzacky.
Oh.
Yeah.
A fashionista.
It's a long way to go for a very bad joke, but I think that is what he was trying to do.
She misses Vermont and likes going to the farmer's market, learning to cook. Love the subtle drop. I want a family, a true partnership. She ITMs that she's word vomiting. And she says to the other women, it was the Gabby show. Why didn't he kiss me? And we get the group date rose circle. Zach says, thanks for opening up. Ariel, really smooth and easy. Runner up. Katie, fun convos and effortless. Another runner-up. Jess, big convo, opened up. Group date rose.
Congrats to Jess on that big zero-pointer. Then Zach leaves. Well, I gotta get at her. And then Gabby ITM's feeling scared that he didn't even mention her in the lead-up. She didn't even get, hey, good conversation. Didn't even get a pat on the back here. She walks off into the night.
You think he picks who he's allowed to talk about in the group date rose circle? No.
He doesn't pick any of this.
They literally yelled at him. They were like, you didn't do it on the first group date. On this one, you have to do the circle and say the runners up.
Totally. He picks his ring winner. They write the rest of the show. We know this. And then Gabby walks off into the night, shedding tear. And a producer goes to check on her as she cries. And they have a little conversation. She tells the producer that she got no validation from him at all. She shouldn't have to feel like a worthless person. She's hurting. And again, more producers than we've ever fucking seen. Mm-hmm. And they're all STCOing. It's grotesque. These are the very people who forced Gabby to be a fucking turtle on night one. They set that up. They are the ones who define who gets to talk to the lead in what order. If you are a turtle, it's because the producers have not allowed you to speak to him. And now they're like, oh, it's going to be okay. You did this to her. Anyway, I could go on, but I won't. Portion 10.
Sir, this is...
Yes, this is the deepest corner of the fucking pit.
Wendy's, sir.
Hell no.
Portion something. We're at the house.
10.
Katie says it's going to be hard to see someone go home. Portion 10. Brianna, ITM's a lot of anxiety. We are getting a lot of Brianna ITMs in this episode. And we get the cocktail party. Everyone is freaking out. Zach enters. He says he's freaking out again. But it was a big fun week. Real bad bitch energy. I'm feeling like a bad bitch right now. This reminded me of when they left in the line in Ben Higgins' season. I ain't that white. Yes. That's what this felt like to me.
He'll say that he feels like a bad bitch.
Just giving fodder to Bachelor Clues.
I love it. I absolutely loved it. Thank you for that one, Zach. And thank you for the producers for leaving it in. Anyway, he says he appreciates Christina meeting his family. And he outs her to the other players here. She didn't tell them that. She kept this a secret. And that is what you're supposed to do. She's doing the right play. He made the wrong play. And that is why he is getting a very rare lead.
Error of the game.
You don't do this, motherfucker. You got a few jobs as a lead. One is to not interfere in what the players are doing with the second audience, unless you're absolutely forced to. To just throw this fucking shit out, to not have had the conversation with her. Are you going to tell the other players about this? When you're on a one-on-one date that has a special element, like an early meeting of the family, a pretty woman, anything that other players will be jealous of, you don't fucking bring it up if you're a player, unless you're going to use it to your advantage. If you have some strategy around it, great. But if you're doing this as a lead, you have to ask that player, are you going to tell the other players? And you have to uphold whatever their decision is. And here he just fucking immediately outs her. And she's like, I didn't tell anyone that. And they kind of get past it. It doesn't seem like people are too pissed, but I don't know. They cut shit. You know, I don't know if they were pissed or not.
I would be pissed if I were her.
Exactly. I would too.
We're almost through the second month of this year, but that doesn't mean that you should forget about those New Year's resolutions, your new goals, especially your skincare goals. Small, easy changes in your routine can have amazing results. And your secret weapon should be Dime Beauty. I've been using this stuff. Look at me. Look at my face, Pace Case.
You're glowing.
How young do I look? Tell me. Tell me the number.
That's a Pace Case glow. You look like a little baby.
Thank you. That's the look I'm going for. And I put the stuff on at night, Dime's eye cream. And then they have a dewy day cream that I also use. And this is the result.
I've literally never used a moisturizer before. Mm-hmm. I've always had oily skin. But now it's getting to that time. And I made one of my New Year's resolutions to be to do my skincare routine. And I'm using the dewy day cream in the morning. I keep it on the left. Using the restorative night cream, I keep it on the right. It's bim, bam, boom. I know which one to use. And now my face is moisturized all the time. And it's so nice.
You look like a baby as well.
Thank you. I was waiting for it. A little slow. But this takes the guesswork out of the routine. So this is part of the work system, the two moisturizers. There's also a sold out retinol alternative, the TBT cream. I can't wait to try that one as well. Dime has over 2 million happy customers and their product reviews are literally all 5 stars.
This year, love your skin again. Go to dimebeautyco.com now and unlock your discount. That's dimebeautyco.com. Creams and serums are made of 70% water, 15% preservatives and emulsifiers, leaving only around 15% for the active ingredients that your skin needs. But luckily now, there's Fiber Skincare.
15 years ago, the scientists behind Fiber Skincare started working on nanofibers, which are 500 times smaller than human hair. You know, I saw that in 3 Body Problem. Mm. 1 year ago, they patented a way of wrapping the nanofiber around oil or liquid-based ingredients. This means they can deliver 5 times the active ingredients compared to creams or serums, as there is no need for water, preservatives, or emulsifiers.
The first formulation made with this technology is plant-based, anti-wrinkle. It's a set of patches that you use over a series of 7 days. You just put these on whenever you would apply your serums, and your skin is going to feel tighter in 10 seconds. And over the 7-day program, it has been clinically proven to reduce wrinkles by, get this, 19.4%, a very precise percentage. In fact, they have a tighter skin guarantee. If your skin isn't tighter in 7 days, they're going to give you your money back, no questions asked.
You get the tighter skin guarantee with this 7-day routine. Tighter skin or your money back. Get a 15% discount code by using the discount code GAME. That's Fiber Skincare.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You're there.
But luckily, nothing phases her. So
I know. God, I know.
We see Gabby says it's, he asks about her comfort level. She says it's getting easier, but she feels like they're behind, but she appreciates he's making time to speak to every girl. I liked this, like pointing out a kind of particular thing about him as a bachelor. I'm excited it's you. She's doing all the right things for this first basically mini date conversation. And he tells her he gets giddy butterflies with her love level one. And she love level ones him and then crinkles him peanut butter cups, which he already talked about liking.
Mm-hmm.
Great idea. And
perfect play.
She says, want a lady and the trumpet. Another amazing play in order to get screen time.
Fantastic play. I agree.
Lady and the Tramp, all food with the lead.
And it leads to a kiss. Kind of a grotesque kiss where they're each eating slimy peanut butter cups out of each other's mouths. But nonetheless, that is a kiss.
It doesn't matter. It's not for them. It's for us.
I agree. Then we see Brooklyn gets her one-on-one time. She has a little plastic horse thing set up where she's trying to teach him how to lasso. He misses. Then she gives him a kiss for luck. Brianna is sitting nearby, but she can't watch them.
I mean, that we talk about the good luck kiss in the book, too. By the way, it's like, I could be any of these people.
No, I know. They're all making plays that are in the book. But we then see Brianna ITMing, feeling shaky and explaining that no one could prepare you for this experience. It's tough to see the other players forming connections, and she feels she is running in place. She says, it would have been smooth sailing if I would not have gotten America's Fimp. Fascinating.
Shitting on the process.
Not only shitting on the process, shitting on an experiment that the producers tried that obviously failed. It's a joke. No one thinks that's a real fucking rose, that anybody was voting on it. They clearly just gave it to her because they designed a deep run for her. Whether that's going to happen or not now, who knows, because of all the weird shit that's going to go on the next few episodes with tattling and the fight that they're going to put her in with Christina Mandrell. But she says here, smooth sailing. If you wouldn't have fucked me with this weird America Fimpros, she's shitting on the experiment itself. The process, yes, generally speaking, but this is a weird piece of the process that has never existed before. And it has fucked her up. It's fucked up her play style. I found that pretty fascinating.
I don't know if it's actually true that this interfered with her play, but she now is saying that no one can prepare you for the ups and the downs of this process.
Well, I think psychologically it fucks with her. And I understand how that could be because you know that he didn't give you that rose. Even if you believe, in quotes, America gave you the rose, it still isn't Zach. If you are more aware and you know that the producers gave you the rose, that still isn't Zach either. But if you can convince yourself that it was the producers, that should at least give you confidence that they want you there.
Right?
But I don't know.
And you got to wear the rose dress.
Yeah. Nonetheless, Brianna then ITMs that Mandrell made a mean comment about her night one. And we see the footage, this conversation they had over by the bar where Mandrell is like, you got the rose and that rose dress. This is rigged. And she's kind of joking here. This doesn't seem like a serious conversation. And then she says, I hate you. Just kidding.
You look beautiful and I hate you.
Yeah. It didn't seem malicious to me. But nonetheless,
I did think it was weird that it was in the night one footage, and I kind of thought about that. And now I see why it was, because it's going to be this evidence for this tattle.
But what I don't understand about it, I guess, at this point, and it doesn't even matter what I'm about to say, was it truly malicious or not? I don't think it was. Nonetheless, you cannot commit verbiage like that to the document. It will be used against you. So it was kind of an error on Mandrell's part. Now, how she winds up playing it through the course of the season is going to really determine how detrimental the error was. But, and also how will Zach be convinced by the other players if she was truly malicious or not? Is there going to be a whole group of them that comes together to, you know, basically say she's two different people when the cameras are on and when the cameras are off? I don't know. But we get this footage and, you know, everyone who saw it can make their own opinions about whether they think Mandrell was being malicious or not. I personally don't. But nonetheless, Brianna ITM's feeling slapped in the face by it. And then Brianna and Mandrell are forced to have a girl chat. This is, in my opinion, Mandrell's first big challenge. And I'm going to read something from a book very quickly. The book is called How to Win the Bachelor. This is page 146. This is where we're talking about two-on-one dates and what leads into, you know, you winding up being on a two-on-one date, which is a rivalry, just like the one we're seeing now. And this is what it says.
Professor Clues.
If producers escort you into what they call a girl chat, a forced conversation between two or more players, usually about one or more other players, be aware of the fact that they're likely grooming you for a role in a rivalry. It will become increasingly apparent if you're forced into a one-on-one conversation with another player that is contentious from the beginning. That's exactly what's happening here. And it will be irrefutable when you hear your name read on that two-on-one date card. In this case, the first and best play is an immediate and sincere apology to whoever the other player in the rivalry might be. Diminish the producer's ability to use perceived hostility against both of you and ultimately turn the two-on-one to a civil affair. So here it's not a two-on-one, but this is exactly what's happening. And so they sit down. Brianna brings up her struggles. She says that she has had a fear. There were negative feelings. She says there was one... This is where she's talking to Zach. When she's talking to Christina, she brings up these comments. You said you hate me, JK. Immediately, Mandrell apologizes. Fucking immediately. So sorry to have hurt your feelings.
Thank you for sharing. Never want anyone to feel that way. Never my intention at all.
Yep. It's exactly correct. And all Brianna can do is say, well, I guess I have to believe there was no malicious intent, but I need to see your actions. So she can drag this out into maybe like a secondary version of it where it's like, okay, you said the right thing, but will you do the right thing? But nonetheless, there's no grounds now for Brianna to further this rivalry. And there's no grounds for producers to be able to stoke the flames. Mandrell handled this perfectly. That is why it was my
play of the game.
It was, I mean, it's a perfect play. This is exactly what you should do in all of these situations. And even if you're an amazing player, like Christina Mandrell, you might have this happen to you. So you have to be prepared. It was incredible. I mean, she was getting the lines out before Brianna could even get in another sentence. It was like, I'm sorry about this. That was never my intention. Like, I will make it better.
And she even put it to her. She's like, well, what did I say exactly? She's like, she puts it on her. You have to say the thing. What offended you? And then she says it and she's like, oh, I'm so sorry. I mean, you might even say that this play was textbook. See what I did there?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Well.
So then Brianna gets her one-on-one time with Zach and she brings up her struggles and she says basically that she's had fear. There were negative feelings in the house towards her. She said there was one person specifically. Do you want to know who it is? This is a pre-tattle. She's basically asking Zach, should I tattle? Now, if you're going to go into a tattle, in my opinion, you just fucking do it. You can't half step a tattle. And that's what she's trying to do here. And Zach's like, well, if you need to share something, share it, I guess. But I don't like drama at all.
Yeah, I don't like drama. If it's already handled, that's great too. Don't need to hear about it. And then Brianna keeps going and says it's little comments like, I hate you, JK. And Zach's like, that would be really annoying. And Brianna's like, it made me feel like everyone hated me. But he's like, it's dumb that even happened, but emotions are high. Our combos are very strict. And Brianna's vague, nameless Mandrell tattle was my
error of the game.
If you're going to come for Mandrell, don't miss. What is this? What is a tattle? It's like, we've had a general tattle before, but having a specific tattle about another player and then not saying their name after you've already squashed the beef.
Couldn't agree more. That's why this was also my
error of the game.
Just kidding. Mine was Zach's, but this was my error of the game for a player.
See, here we go again. Oh, there's one for Zach, one for a player. Now you have two errors?
Well, this is the true error. Zach can't really get an error because he's not a player. But
not true. He is a player.
He's not. He's a lead.
We're all players.
He's an audience.
We're all players.
Nah, I don't agree. Nonetheless, this was my player error. I agree with you. You can't do this. If you're going to do a tattle, it has to be a real tattle. And what she's essentially done here in this conversation is make sure that Zach has no interest in her. and make sure that the producers now can only use her in a rivalry with Christina Mandrell. Maybe there'll be other players dragged into that, but that is her only value now in the game to any of these audiences. And so she's essentially hamstrung herself. She will only be in the game as long as Mandrell is, which will probably be a long fucking time, but Mandrell's going to have to beat her in order to do that, which means now you're in a real do or die situation against arguably the greatest player that we've ever seen.
Yeah. I mean, it's like when Shein came at Hannah Ann.
Yes.
And she was, and Hannah Ann was like, this is done.
Oh my God. This conversation is over. Moving on. Goodbye.
You're speaking to a ring winner. Hannah Sloss.
I hope Slunk is doing well tonight, wherever you are. Anyway, she ITMs, Brianna does, being nervous because her relationship isn't off to the best start. Then DLP enters. We get an 8-ting, an octo-ting. Standard play is over. This man does more fucking tings than, I mean, there's only been one other Dark Lord, I was going to say, than any Dark Lord in history. But I got to say.
It's because he's having fun.
No, he's not. He's fucking around. There's a difference. You can have fun and not fuck around. Show some fucking respect to the ting. 8 fucking tings is too many fucking tings. 3. It was perfected by Dark Lord Harrison. Ting, ting, ting. He's
savoring his moment. It's his special time.
Okay, I'm going to run a quick experiment with me, with you. You tell me which one of these sounds better. Ready? Ting, ting, ting. Or... ting, 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 ting.
The second one.
Oh, you motherfucker. Portion 11 begins. It's night. The players are waiting on the risers. We're at the rose ceremony now.
Thank God we're getting rose ceremony, not some bullshit.
That is true. Thank you, producers. At least you gave us that. Kat is nervous because she was in last position last week. Brianna ITM struggling in confusion. Zach emerges.
Student of this game.
Yep.
Last flower. Not good.
That is true.
She's reading and everyone's a reader.
Shawcross gives a standard rose ceremony speech. She's overwhelmed. Every woman showed him a lot about themselves. It only gets harder from here. And then we get into the rose ceremony. 3 players have 0-point roses. That is Catherine, Christina, and Jess. And we are giving out 14 roses tonight. In order, they are Brooklyn, Genevieve, Greer, Allie, Charity, Katie, Gabby, Ariel, Anastasia, Kylie, Davia, Mercedes, Bailey, and DLP emerges from the shadows. This is the FRT final rose tonight. Brianna gets it, and then DLP emerges for the TAM SIG. So we know Brianna is being set up, obviously, to go into this rivalry, and we'll see more of that in the promo to come. But we say goodbye to Kat, Victoria J, and Kimberly are the only 3 shown. Were there more people that got eliminated than that? I don't know.
I don't know either. They have cut at Victoria and Kimberly completely out of the show. They had their martyrdom.
Correct. They received nothing except obviously Victoria J got a pretty funny tag.
Oh, that's true. Kimberly at least gets a goodbye shot.
Yeah, that's true. Victoria J got no exit speech. Kat gets a little exit speech, confused about why he doesn't want to explore more with her. Kimberly gets an exit speech with tears. But I don't know why the producers would include Victoria Jameson in this season with almost 1 million TikTok followers and not use her at all. It literally cut her out of the episode. She was on the group date that they cut the day portion. Kat, I don't understand this at all. She's immediately electric on screen. You want to see much more of her constantly, and they just fucking kick her off the show. I don't get it.
And they know this. They have tape of all of the people doing ITMs. You know who's going to be a better colorful narrator.
And if their argument is that she was too goofy, not serious enough in this season that was supposed to be all 4TRR, then why the fuck do you do the Tajwan thing? There's just nothing to back up any of these choices they're making, in my opinion. Nonetheless.
Well, here's a choice that I do like. In the promo, we are getting an early overnight camping date. A little homage to the Jason Mesnick camping date.
Yeah. But this takes place at the Natural History Museum in Los Angeles, it looks like. Have you ever been there?
Yeah.
Me too.
A lot of dead creatures.
I know. Plenty of dead creatures. Anyway, we see in the next Bachelor episode, we're going to get skydiving, forced violence, football date, bikinis, kisses, Natural History Museum, the overnight date, walk of shame. Christina must be exposed. Tears, group title, Mandrill on the stairs. And then we get this tag where Victoria Jameson is asking the group when it's okay to fart in front of the person you're dating. And we get some varied and funny answers. Some players are like, yeah, whatever, you farting is farting. Some players are like, I would never fart. I'll leave the house and run across the street if I have to fart. That was fucking intense.
Yeah, some of these answers, I feel like the patriarchy is maybe a little too ingrained, ladies.
Yeah. How many of these players are going to have colon cancer?
Make him leave the house.
Good one.
Or her.
Good one.
Or they.
Good one. We see this every season. They'll cut somebody who seems like an interesting player kind of early on with no provocation, no rhyme or reason. They just stop appearing in the show. I'll never understand really why they do it. Again, especially when you have these things where the Tajwan thing is, it's completely pointless. It furthered no plot. It served no dramatic function. It was just a waste of time. I really don't get it, but whatever. That said,
I don't know.
We did have some good stuff.
Have a villain come in from the outside because you don't have a villain.
But it didn't work. So when you have that footage, when you're like
a one episode villain,
but to what end? Like, we're going to fire her in there and he's not going to keep her. We have all this footage. Should we go ahead and try to, you know, blaze 5 to 10 minutes on that? Yeah, might as well. It's like, did they pay her and they're like, they got to get their fucking money's worth? I don't know. I don't know why they included it. It's so boring and so stupid. And you can see it coming from a mile away. None of it seems remotely real. Anyways, who was your MVP? I think I know.
For somehow getting in a shit ton of ITMs in this episode and playing her first time very astutely talking to Zach, Gabby was my
MVP.
Look, Christine Mandrell, it's like hard to not give it to her again.
I agree.
It's hard. But I feel like if you have turtled up to this point, your statistics are very low. So Gabby navigating this was a really excellent, excellent job.
I don't disagree. It was fine play. But of course, Christina Mandrell was my
MVP.
It's utter dominance. It's utter dominance. We went through those stats of first one-on-one dates of the season. That's not a choice The Bachelor makes. That's a choice the producers make. They know the importance of that date, and they're saying she gets it. They're tapping her to get it. She is the next Bachelorette, and she is playing like that. She is putting these other fucking players to shame. Give me the early meeting of the family. I'm going to pretend like, oh, I'm nervous. And then I'm going to go in and charm the fucking pants off of every goddamn person in that fucking backyard under the shadow of the giant American flag flying on the fucking front porch. That's what she does.
She's literally our textbook.
She's incredible to watch. And I cannot wait to see what happens, especially as they're now trying to mount this attack against her, which I think she's going to fucking sidestep. Yeah. Looks like she's going to do some IFI work. I can't wait to see that.
You can't take down Mandrell.
Well, we'll see. We'll see if anybody can, but this is a pretty good game. I didn't like the dismissal of the group or the day portion of the group date. I thought that could have been handled so much better. Didn't like the Tajwan thing, but nonetheless, Mandrell pulls this out for me. This was still a stellar game to watch because of her play, in my opinion.
I agree, in my opinion.
Well, thank you everyone for joining us for this breakdown of the second game of season 27 of The Bachelor. We hope you'll join Pace Case for This Week in Bachelor Nation on Friday. And then we're going to have a Digging Deeper out for you next Monday. And please check out Off Contract with Courtney Robertson. She has her own feed set up. I believe as of the recording of this podcast, it is number 13 on the iTunes TV and movie chart. So congrats to Courtney Robertson.
And go check it out if you haven't. I'm going to be doing Twibbin with Catherine Dudas, my co-host for HBO Lax.
Oh.
On Friday. She just confirmed.
The co-writer and director of the feature film Juniper, which I believe you can see on Showtime still right now, right?
You can.
Well, I hope you guys have fun doing that. And thanks again, everyone, for joining us. Before we go, as always,
have fun on your romantic trip.
Thank you. I will. I'm going to try to call down a few alien craft. Before we go, as always, what is that Dwa bat?
It has been 7,617 days without an Asian bachelor. Praise be, Dark Lord Palmer.
Please rate this podcast. Please review this podcast. Please get a friend to listen to us, and then please rate this podcast. Please review this podcast. Please get a friend to listen to us, and then please rate this podcast. Please review this podcast. Please get a friend to listen to us, and then